How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
95 all. Jazz don't call a timeout. Joe Johnson comes to the front court. Gets a pick from Ingles. 7 seconds left. Tie game. Joe Johnson working Jamal Crawford. 3 seconds. 2-1 for the win. Yes! 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 Joe Johnson saves again!
You are Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
It is Locked On Jazz for the 1st of May, and we're still playing. Jazz beat the Clippers in Game 7, and now get ready for the Warriors. We'll talk about it all coming up on today's edition of Locked On Jazz. Ba-dum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-pow. How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. Ha-ha! We're still playing. They did it. They won Game 7. Fifth time in Jazz history that a Jazz team has played Game 7 and the Jazz won it. Awesome. Absolutely awesome. How are you? I'm David Locke. I don't even know if I've already said this. Have I already said this? I'm so out of it. Radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. Thanks for tuning in. If you're new to the program, this is a daily podcast about the Utah Jazz. Well, you can subscribe on iTunes or Android, however you want to get it. We deliver it to you each and every day. Today's a little later than usual because I was up really late last night. Really cool experience. Just getting ready for the game and prepping and doing some cool stuff, and I just haven't gotten to it yet. But who cares? Let's get to the show. Today's show is brought to you by my good friends at Murdoch Hyundai. I got a nice tweet from someone saying that they bought their first car dealership car from Murdoch Hyundai and had a great experience. I haven't heard whether they got the Elantra, the Santa Fe, or the Tucson, or what they did, but it'll be awesome. And by SeatGeek, use the promo code LOJAZZ, and you get $20 back. Sent to you as a rebate. So the Jazz did it. We're not doing pins across the world. We're just going right into this today. The Jazz did it. Absolutely awesome. They won Game 7, won three road games in the series. That has been done 4 or 5 times in the first round. It was done this year as well by Boston. Game 7 on the road. And they did it in commanding fashion. That game actually was never particularly close. Clippers led it 3-2 and 5-4, and then the Jazz took the lead, and then it became tied at 24. And then from there, the Jazz took a subtle control in the second quarter, a dominating control in the third quarter, and there wasn't much of a rally. There's so many aspects to it, but big picture, I think the Jazz were terrific for 7 games. I thought they were executed, performed, focused with a resiliency, with a fight for the 7 games. And the Clippers were undermanned with the Blake injury. And by the short 36-hour turnaround was, I thought, a huge advantage for the Jazz. I thought that the whole time. And that the energy and effort that a one-dimensional team with Chris Paul had to put out on the floor to combat a multi-dimensional team meant that the Clippers, by the end, had run out of juice. The singularly best story that I just, when Rudy got in foul trouble, was the idea that Derek Favors and Gordon Hayward were going to suddenly lead the Jazz to a playoff series win, first one in 7 years. The two pieces of the rebuild that have been with us the entire way. The one piece that frankly signaled the rebuild. The trade, you know, we acquire Gordon to complement Darren. That's, I mean, draft day, that's what our thought was. This guy will complement Darren well. Another playmaker, the way Hornacek did for Stockton. That was very much the thought at the time. Then that team has its problems, blows up, and we move into the rebuild with a trade of Darren Williams for Derek Favors. And then Favors becomes the forgotten man. The injuries, the emergence of Rudy, the payment of Rudy. Derek can't stay healthy. The evolution of the game into multiple or singular big men with multiple shooters, meaning that two bigs on the floor, seems unusual rather than standard. And here comes Derek to win us a playoff series. He really wins game one. His defense wins game three. He was just tremendous in game seven. The outside shot that hadn't gone suddenly went. And as Ron Boone pointed out so well on the broadcast, the fact is that there are parts of Derek's game which are a better fit to that series than Rudy. When Rudy plays, he drops on the pick and roll. He drops into the middle of the lane. He plays a drop style. That's what he's good at. That's what the coaches tell him to do. Derek, not a very good rim protector, not a great backpedaler. Sorry, got to put some liquid on the voice today. Instead, plays up high in the pick and roll better than Rudy probably does. And in turn, is able to play Chris Paul, take away his cutback, do some things to have an impact on him that Rudy frankly didn't have. But to hit the shot, he was one of 10 from outside 10 feet going into that. And he's just such a great kid. I mean, just the part to me that just warms my heart is he's just such a terrific kid. It is so impressive that he kind of stuck with it here, fought through all this, and had this performance. I just admire him. I'm so excited for him. And he's battling. You know, this is a guy who, when healthy at times, was purely dominant. You know, he put DeMarcus Cousins and Anthony Davis on the back page a few times with the way he just absolutely embarrassed them. And yesterday, he was great. And Gordon had an unreal playoff series. I mean, the growth that we've seen out of Gordon Hayward is just tremendous. Totally awesome and tremendous. To see him grow this way. And I think still some of us wondered in a playoff series against the Clippers with Bob Mute guarding him, what was going to happen? Right? I'll admit it. You know, the one thing you wonder about Gordon is he good enough to dictate, right? The greatest of the games are able to dictate every game that's played. Regardless of your defense, they're getting their stuff. Well, in six games, 27 points, 3 rebounds, 8 assists, 47% from the field, 46% from 3, hit on 43 of 45 free throws. He absolutely dictated. He absolutely controlled what was taking place, how it took place. And the beauty to me of his game is that if he's double-teamed, he makes the right play. If his team needs him to pass, he passes. If team needs to rebound, he rebounds. I mean, he wins the series with hustle plays. In the Game 5 win, those are hustle plays. He's not hijacking possessions, going to what and mano a mano. If he's double-teamed, he's going to pass to the right guy and help his teammates. Rewatching Game 6 on the flight over, or a bunch of times where I thought to myself, come on, Gordon, you got to assert yourself. Well, on those possessions, he makes the pass to the guy who ends up scoring. He ends up making the pass to the guy who makes the pass to the guy who's scoring. He's bringing two guys to him to make his teammates better. And when he has the opportunity, he takes over or gets the window to. And yesterday, in a key stretch, when the Clippers were making the run, he went three straight, boom, 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 ball game over. His growth, his player development, his work, tremendous. Just that to me, those two storylines, first playoff series win in 7 years, and the two guys have been a part of it the whole time are the key cogs. You go back, it's Boozer and Darren who win the last game seven for the Jazz. It was the first time they'd won a playoff series in 7 years. Off to go play Golden State next. And it was those two guys with a little help of Memo and some other. It's a model that's somewhat similar to what Dennis Lindsay has done here. Today's show is brought to you by Murdoch Hyundai. So I think you know I'm driving a Murdoch Santa Fe right now, enjoying it immensely. My buddy came in from town, picked him up. He's like, yeah, it's pretty nice. He drives a Porsche. He's big time. All right. I'm just making fun of him because I know he listens. And it's not, he doesn't drive the Pepper. Or the location. Okay, that was an inside joke. Now, let's get to the real ad here instead of me just having fun with my buddy. The Santa Fe has been such a kind of pleasant surprise that you can, for a decent price, you can get, a really good price actually, you can get a wonderful driving car with super space inside, with lots of and all, gadgets, bells and whistles, and all the fun stuff, with all the safety features. And when I say a decent price, it's $20,000 less than, you know, the ritzy name that does not even give you all of those things. You'll be surprised if you go check out a Hyundai, how much you can get for your money and how nice it is. You aren't cutting corners to be able to have this nice an experience. If you're driving a Camry, if you're driving an Accord, you've been doing it forever, they're great cars. I can understand your brand loyalty. Just check it out. Take a moment and check it out and see whether or not maybe you get a lot more for a lot less money. Do it at Murdoch Hyundai. I've gotten to know Blake and KO and the Murdochs well. Good family. And as the guy who tweeted me said yesterday, you know, it was his first dealership experience and it was great. They really pride themselves on making sure that you have an experience that would make their family proud. 4646 South State Street. It's Murdoch Hyundai. Check it out. I'm driving the Santa Fe, loving it. If you want a sedan, the Sonata, the Elantra, they all can do incredible things for you and give you a amazing car for limited funds when you compare it to the marketplace. Let's go specifically to Game 7. The keys to me, rather than kind of the big picture Hollywood stuff of Hayward and Gordon. Favors and Gordon. The most impressive aspect was the early effort. Having lost Game 6, seemingly, you know, maybe have lost the series in a lot of people's mind. These guys came to the arena ready to go last night, or yesterday afternoon. And by forcing Chris Paul and DeAndre Jordan to play from behind, you're forcing them to exert huge, huge, huge amounts of energy. That, to me, was the first aspect of this that was super important. The second one was that they were able to... my mind just went somewhere else. They were able to... They were able to be positive plus minus when Chris Paul was off the floor, which they did not do in Game 6 early. That's when they started to stretch the lead. That's when they took control. Now Paul's playing from behind. He's using more energy. There isn't this move the basketball kindness to him. There were two possessions from a negative standpoint for the Clippers I thought were vital. Wait one second.
Sorry, I'm... busy. I'll be out in about 35 minutes.
Housekeeping. The end of first quarter, Chris Paul checks himself in the game to get the last possession of the quarter. Possession, Raymond Felton dribbles it out, goes one-on-one. Paul never touches. Felton gets a bad shot. Midway through the second quarter, I think it was, Austin Rivers has the ball guarded by Boris Diaw, flips it over to Chris Paul, asks for it back, and doesn't get it. I thought on the idea that the Clippers might have some internal issues, those were two fairly big plays in the game that showed that they were not together. Whereas the Jazz, to the kind of my Hayward point, the exact opposite. Just plays the game right, engages his teammates. They're still playing, right? Jimmy Butler and Paul George aren't still playing. Gordon Hayward's still playing. I'm going to have to troll some people on the internet with that one. There's a reason. He plays a team game. Chris Paul the Clippers, I thought, got outside the team game. Their offense then became very stagnant, very one-on-one, and we shut them down badly in the second quarter and took control of the game on a 15-2 run in the third. The foul calls on Gobert, I thought, were laughable. I was beside myself. I was just apoplectic or whatever that phrase is. I don't know. I'll have to try to go back and watch the game without emotion at some point if I have time, but I didn't have the unemotional eyes on that game. It was too important. I was too overwhelmed. With the moment to see, I thought the calls were terrible. I'm sure you did as well. You're a Jazz fan right there with me, but I was going out and Brian Seaman, the Clipper announcer, thought that we got a favorable whistle. Okay? So, let's make sure we all understand that emotion and stress and huge games cloud our viewpoint of what we think we're seeing. A few other notes, obviously, and it's so boring, but the whole make or miss league thing plays in here. The Jazz made an unusually high amount of shots early in the series, particularly in the two games at home, even though they lost one of them. They made an unusually low amount of shots in games 5 and 6, even though they won one of them. And you figured it would settle somewhere in between. The Clippers went 6 of 25 from 3, so they suddenly were a make-or-miss league. Maybe they were tired, or maybe they were out of rhythm. I think those two things are true. I think their ball movement stopped. I thought they weren't helping each other out at all. Maybe we were a little better moving the ball and helping each other out. Joe Ingles, Rodney Hood, Barry shots. Rodney hits a deep, deep three. Joe Ingles gets a corner look. And those are huge plays. Because, Rodney goes 4 of 6. Joe Ingles goes 2 for 3. That's different than Ofer. And that's what they both did in game 6. Rodney went 2 for 8 with a layup and a dunk and fast break, one in a drive and one in a fast break situation, but his outside shooting was over. It's a tremendous, sometimes it's just that simple. Now, is that just because the ball doesn't go in all the time? Because if you're flipping a coin at 50%, sometimes you hit 7 of 9 that are heads, or is it because the ball doesn't move, your feet aren't set, your body's beaten up, you're worn? Who knows, right? But that is a lot of what took place in game 7 as we were making shots they weren't. Suddenly, George Hill had a fabulous series. I don't think there was a lot of recognition of it. I know a lot of people were having a hard time with his defense on Chris Paul. But let's take a step back and let's look at, he hit a lot of big shots. He controlled the tempo of the game. He made plays when he needed to. He hit 48% from the field and 39% from three while guarding Chris Paul for most of the series. Ingles helped him out. But he still had that assignment for a tremendous, tremendous amount of the series. And the impact on the games and the control he exerted was maybe bigger than anything else. And this gets to another kind of big picture topic and aspect of things. Dennis Lindsay put this team together for last night, or for yesterday afternoon. That's exactly what this team was put together for. George Hill calmly handling that circumstance. Boris Diaw being the best plus-minus player for the Jazz in the series with his experience. Joe Johnson taking control of the game for periods in the series for periods of time as he plays in his eighth game seven. So Derek and Gordon, the pieces of the puzzle that for 7 years are going to this. Rodney Hood, the young kid. Joe Ingles, the kid they find. And then these three pieces that bring the Jazz an experience, a calmness, a togetherness. It was crazy impressive. But Joe Johnson, Boris Diaw, and George Hill were acquired for yesterday. And all of them answered terrifically. That's truly the most impressive aspect of all of this to me, is that with a knowledge of a plan, Dennis Lindsay and Quinn Snyder put together a team, and then the players executed it to get the Jazz to the second round of the playoffs. And I have always said, for all the talk of championships and this and that, I want to win a championship. Is this team win a championship? I've always had a very different perspective on what you're trying to do as a franchise. You can disagree with it, but this is my opinion. You're trying to get to the final four in your conference. And then you hope for a matchup that's good for you. Maybe a sprained ankle on the wrong side that helps to get you through something. Whatever it might be. But if you can get out of the first round and get into the final four of your conference, you got a chance. That's what you're shooting for year in and year out. To win a championship is such an elusive, out there goal. It'd be great. I'm all for it. But getting to the second round is hard enough. And trying to win a championship is seemingly almost impossible. So, instead, I would take Final Four in the West, and then let's see what happens. Get a good matchup, get to the Western Conference Finals. Get a bad matchup like those Boozer, Darren, Memo did, keep getting the Lakers all the time? You don't. Have we gotten the Rockets? We would have advanced. They couldn't guard us. So it really gets down to the matchups at this point. You're there. Now we play. I'm not digging into the Warriors yet. We'll review the Clipper series today. I'll dig into the Warriors for you tomorrow. But that to me is what happened yesterday, was the team that was built, that was put together by Dennis Lindsay, with the coaching of Quinn Snyder, came to fruition on the biggest stage in the biggest day of the year to near perfection. It's just incredible. Just absolutely incredible. Today's show is brought to you by SeatGeek. If you're looking to go to a game, a concert, a theater event, whatever it might be, Hamilton in San Francisco tonight, like I might try to do, doubt it, but might try. Single ticket, might see if there's something out there that's not $8 million. I don't know if they're even playing on a Monday night. I haven't checked my SeatGeek. But here's what you do. You download the app SeatGeek. You go over to the settings tab, enter in the promo code LOJAZZ. Now when you make your first purchase, you're going to get a $20 check in the mail. Why use SeatGeek? Because one, it compiles all the tickets from all of the locations around for you, so you don't have to go search multiple places. Second, it gives everything a ticket score. So let's use my Hamilton SeatGeek example because I'm doing it as we speak here. Let's say that I just search it and I look up Hamilton and I'm in San Francisco and it tells me on May 2nd, which is Tuesday. So let's go to Wednesday, Hamilton, San Francisco, May 3rd. There would be my chance, Wednesday night. And it searches for all the tickets for me, and it shows me where they are, how many tickets are available, and what the price is. And it tells me right now that everything that's available for Hamilton is an awful deal. It's honest. Look at this. It's telling me the truth. It's telling me that all of the deals are awful, that I am just going to pay huge amounts of money to go see Hamilton on Wednesday night and get an awful deal. It's truthful. Thanks. Now, what happens if I want to go see something else? Maybe my Giants are in town, something like that. You just click on the event. It tells me that on Monday, May 1st at 7:10, the Giants are at L.A. to play the Dodgers. All right, well, so that doesn't work. But if I wanted to go see a game in L.A., I just click the app. It shows me, searches all the tickets, tells me, and look at this. There's amazing deals. Row B has an amazing 98 ticket score. The next one has a 97. So there's all sorts of real. For $25, I could have gone and seen that because the Clipper fans are all Dodger fans, and they're all crying in their soup, and so they're not going to games. That's not true. So go to SeatGeek. Find out the amazing – all the tickets are there. Then they're sorted for you, and then they're guaranteed when it comes to your phone. So do it and enter in the promo code LOJAZZ. A few thoughts for you on the Warriors just before we wrap this up. They're great. They might be the greatest team that has ever been compiled. I'll get into this with you more, but I will tell you this. The concept that they're a jump-shooting team is wrong. What they are is a spread-floor team that takes a lot of threes, but that absolutely eviscerates you at the rim. They are the best rim-shooting team in the NBA by an unbelievable margin. And so what they do is they run all these actions, they worry you about the three, they continually keep that movement, and they get to the rim. And they kill you at the rim. And I think they score more points at the rim than they do on threes. But they are by far the best rim team in the NBA. It's not actually close. They shoot 67% at the rim. The league average is 61%. The next best team is 64.7. It's Cleveland. The next best is Houston at 64.6, interestingly, and then the Clippers at 64.1. The best offenses are the best teams at the rim for all this three talk. So they get to the rim. Hey, they're also the best mid-range team. They're also, you know, they're sixth in above corner threes. They're second in above the break threes. They're unbelievable. But the issue here is that the Jazz may be able to defend that aspect of them and slow them down. They take the 13th most amount of shots, percentage of their shots in the restricted area. If Rudy Gobert can have an impact defensively in this series around the rim at a high level, this series is going to be different than people realize. Secondarily, if you slow them down and keep them in the half court, they run a lot of transition, but it's not as much as, I mean, it's considerable, and they're great at it. But if you can run them out, get them out of transition and slow the game down, then I think that's about 20% of their offense. So you take away the rim and you get them into the half court. They're still totally incredible, but you've neutered two aspects of them that I think equalizes the series a little more than people realize. Now, the flip side is you got to score, and they're the number one, two, or three defense in the NBA as well. They're great. We're playing the greatest team in NBA history. See what we can do with it. That has been tip-off for today. Hope you have a great day. Thanks very much for tuning in. Jazz Advance, you got to love it. It is Locked On Jazz and the Locked On Podcast Network.